And welcome into the Thursday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you. Joseph, good morning. How are you?
Good. I see you're ranting today, so let me just say, okay. I want to say this to people for tonight, too. You know, last night, a little late dinner with some friends from out of town, took the dogs out around 10 o'clock before going to bed, and all of a sudden it sounded like our neighborhood was engaged in warfare, and poor little Gus freaked out. Yesterday was July 2nd. Today is July 3rd. Let all the damn fireworks go off all you want on July 4th. Until then, think of children and dogs, please. Or I'll egg your house.
I'm okay with third. I think
you're
third,
okay with the third.
Third and fourth are my days to just let them fly. I will have this year, because it's a Saturday, I will have some lenience for the fifth.
Okay.
But much beyond that, I don't have much more patience.
Yeah, I realize it's probably a losing battle tonight, right? Like, everybody's off tomorrow, so okay.
The 4th
it's probably
on a
losing battle. Yeah, but last timing, night, screw you, man.
That's you. That's fair.
At 10 o'clock.
That's fair.
That's illegal, and I'm calling the feds in to shut this down. Yeah. Now, what was that about? What was I talking about there?
I don't know.
I think it was assassins.
Oh, God. At least that's over.
All of a sudden, he feels better.
I do, actually.
Good. Yeah, great.
God, I forgot how bad life was when that was going on. See? Appreciate your life, everybody.
No, like, I'm a big July 3rd guy. There are several places around here.
Are you a Devil's Night guy? Because, you know, people in Michigan love Devil's Night.
There's a lot of places around here, and I'm going to one tonight, that have their fireworks shows on July the 3rd. So July 3rd to me, big day around here. So I have leniency for the fireworks today.
Okay.
Fire them off, baby.
You know what? And that's fine. And you're right. I mean, the Saturday's the 5th. On Sunday, July 6th, it starts getting violent on this end.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have a lighter? Light them. Smoke them if you got them, and you're done on Sunday, okay? How about that?
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
But you know that this is going to go to about July the 9th, and you're going to come in here just beside yourself, ready to fight everyone. And I'm kind of looking forward to it.
And it might be time for Kaharski and I to load up on the eggs. Are they cheaper yet?
I don't know.
I'm going to load up on them.
Maybe so. And how's the arm? That's probably the more important thing. Like, is your arm ready to fire them away?
It's better than my foot. No gout in the arm.
Oh, boy. Ian Safar, how we doing? Are you a fireworks shooter, or are you a firework observer?
I mean, I like a good fireworks show, you know, professional one.
Professional one.
Yeah.
Three doors down over
there?
Yeah,
I mean, am I going to go outside and just, like, you know, make a bunch of loud noises for a while?
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit, but it's not really my thing. You know, I like fireworks, don't get me wrong. We've been to the New York fireworks show. When we lived there,
good.
That was cool. They like set them up in the river, like five different barges, and they just kind of go off at the same time. That was pretty cool.
Cool.
It's been a while, but you know, we bought a few, so we'll be setting some off.
We had some sparklers, so we got some sparklers,
couple of those tanks.
Oh yeah,
right.
We used to go all
one
out.
One or two other small things.
Like my parents at their house, we used to go pretty intense with it.
Yeah, me too.
And then a few years ago, we heard one go, like, you know, the and you're like, okay, well, where is it? I don't see it, so where is it? And then all of a sudden it exploded behind our head, and we're like, okay, probably time to call it a day on that one. So, you know, now with the toddler, instead of me running around just lighting explosives everywhere, we just let other people do it.
Yeah, that's a good call. No, I mean, I used to absolutely love it. I mean, I used to, I think we've talked about it before, but you just light up an entire pack of jumping jacks. If anybody knows what jumping jacks are, and you just throw them up in the air, and they're just all over. Oh yeah, and we're shooting bottle rockets at each other. I mean, you know.
Oh yeah,
smart.
We used to do that.
Smart
yeah.
stuff.
Shout out to my buddy David Sisliga and his brothers. They do a pretty nice homemade fireworks show here in town. Lewisburgish.
Oh cool.
Area.
Have you guys seen the every year at this time? The video goes, whether it's around like TikTok or Instagram, or I mean, it's probably on Twitter too, but the put it in reverse, Terry. It's the kid that's in the wheelchair, and they're lighting fireworks off, and they're wanting him to get out of there. And his dad is sitting there watching, and he's just sitting there, and he's not rolling his wheelchair away. And all of a sudden, the fireworks just start going off around him. He's like, put it in reverse, Terry. Put it in reverse. Well, somebody has put that GIF and attached it with Joe, saying, Joe out there with gout lighting his fireworks, and it's just a nice picture of Terry in his wheelchair having a bunch of fireworks go off around him.
I'm not familiar with that, but I will now become familiar.
The intern's just showing me, intern Ryan here, just showing me the video.
It's one of the greatest videos I've made.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty awesome. We got a lot to get into on the program today. Predators head coach Andrew Brunette will be with us at 8:15, so we'll get into all things Nashville Predators. With him, we got the best and worst things in sports coming up later this hour at 6:45. Nick Suss with a very interesting piece on Cam Ward that we're going to get to here in just a few minutes. But John, I do want to start with this. I tuned in yesterday. I was expecting to hear some Jared versus Joe, and I did not. I heard Joe versus Caroline, and it got a little intense there to start with on the college football front. It took me by surprise. I really enjoyed it. But you and Caroline getting after each other a little bit as it relates to the format of the college football playoff.
Yeah, Jared chickened out of being in the competition, and so he could have a day of no matter what was said, Caroline wins! But
he did come to that conclusion very quickly.
I'm like, and then
didn't have a reason for why she won.
Yeah, no reason at all. That's fine. But, yeah, just disappointing that Caroline likes the 4-2-2 or 4-4-2-2 model. I've heard other people with this too, and you know we're all kind of guessing, but she seems to think, and people who believe in that seem to think that it's going to lead to better scheduling. I don't agree. I feel like if you get to the point where you know if you're in the top six in your league, you're at least going to get this stupid play-in game.
Don't get me started on that.
To me, then, you tell me why you're getting banged up in a pre-conference big game, which to me becomes an NFL preseason game. I mean, that's just – like if you're taking it out of the committee's hands altogether and your strength of schedule outside of your conference doesn't matter and it just your standings are all that matters, tell me why. Tell me why you care. Now, again, TV cares.
Sure.
Your AD care, like the fans want. But if I'm like, starting QB's got a little bit of a Twee Tammy. He's not playing this week. I mean, like, I'm not.
Well, what's the consequence, right? The losing.
Right.
There's not one.
There's really not one. Yeah, I mean, yeah, granted, you could argue, well, you know, there would still be, you know, like if Notre Dame's bad that year, there would still be three at-larges. If Notre Dame's good that year, then there's going to be two. So, right. You know, is it worth it to still and you know, competitors, are they still going to play in those games? I mean, that's where I don't know. Like, how are they actually going to approach it? But I do know that if the committee, if we're doing what we are now, love it, hate it. I didn't hate the 12-team last year. If you're just adding teams to it, then – And if schedule strength, as the SEC people are trying to say, needs to mean more, it just needs to mean more, well, then those games do matter. Those games are important. Your conference standings really don't matter, and that's good because conference standings are bunk because conference schedules are all over the place. Beyond the joke of we're the Big Ten and SEC, so we just get more than you because we're the Big Ten and the SEC, I also think that the impact is much better on scheduling and everything the 5-11 way.
I want to see strength of schedule rewarded more than it is. That's what I want to see. Last year, one thing that stood out when you started looking at the discussion around the college football playoff, everybody got so caught up in everybody's record. It's like, I understand, like record matters. Okay. I've talked about that ad nauseum in the college football discussion. Record matters, but how you get to your record also matters. And I think the more you put an emphasis on strength of schedule and that being a factor in how you're determining college football playoff berths, hopefully that leads to the more you're going to see people scheduling good games. That would be the way that I would try to approach that. And from the SEC standpoint, you know, they're not moving to 9, it seems, anytime soon with the conference scheduling part of this, or at least not right now. So, like, I want to see Tennessee play a good game every year. I want to see Georgia play a good game out of conference every year. And I think the more UE can do to encourage that, the better off we're all going to be in the college football discussion.
Right. Again, I think in either system, I do think those games will still exist. But, yeah, look, I think the SEC staying at 8 makes it more likely, makes it easier for them. I'd like to see them go to 9. I'd like to see everybody go to 9. It's still not going to be apples to apples. But I'd like to see it. You're still putting yourself at risk another week. Some of the schedule will be way stronger than other schedules, but you're at least putting yourself at risk as a whole league one more week. And so I think that should happen, but I'm with you. You can't, if you get rid of those games, you know, then we're just going to, I mean, you're just basing what you think of teams on preseason rankings and reputations and all that. And again, that's what the 4-4-2-2 is just, we're the Big Ten. We're the SEC. And again, the Big Ten pushing this now, Tony Petitti with a ridiculous state-run media interview with Joel Klatt. That's the league that benefits and needs it to always get 4 every year. The SEC does not at all. So stand strong, SEC.
Stand strong, and SEC.
Change your mind, Caroline Fenton.
And we are going to, I'm sure, dive into all of this over the next couple of weeks here. I mean, SEC media days are coming up, and this is going to be brought up there, and coaches are going to have different thoughts on it. So this is definitely not the last time we're going to bring it up here on the show, but you know, college football is right around the corner, and we'll get into that more as SEC media days and the like come around here. But I heard that yesterday. Very fascinating discussion, and condolences on your loss to Carolina Fenton yesterday.
Thanks. I'm actually fine losing to Caroline. I'm not fine with Jared judging anything involving me. But
Caroline wins!
I got a surprise up my sleeve!
I'm like, what? We all had no idea.
Caroline wins!
Yeah.
Why? I don't remember.
Reasons, right?
I saw something from Nick Suss yesterday that covers who covers the Titans for the Tennessean. That was really fascinating to me, and I want to bring it up. We'll get Joe's thoughts on it coming next, and it has to do with Cam Ward, and is there a path, a formula the Titans can hope to follow that will speak to success or failure with Cam Ward? We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
How's it been the last 3 days for minicamp?
It's been good. From growing, learning, especially being with the vets, getting our timing down, so I'm excited for the summer.
What's your plan for the next 5 to 6 weeks before you report to camp, and will you gather with your receivers and some of the other quarterbacks and go over things just to kind of refresh everybody?
Just work out, stay in the playbook, and throw the ball. So
that's Cam Ward a few weeks back. Looking ahead to the offseason, training camp right around the corner for the Tennessee Titans. Taking your thoughts on him and the Titans, 615-737-1025. Joe, I was reading in the Tennessean yesterday, and I came across this very interesting piece from Nick Suss, who is a friend of the show and does an outstanding job covering the Tennessee Titans. And basically, it's taken a look, you know, from the Titans standpoint at Cam Ward, but really going back through recent quarterback history and trying to see, is there anything like mathematically or trend wise that you can look at that is a pretty good determiner of success or failure as it relates to the quarterback position? And there's a lot in here. I'd encourage you to go check it out at the Tennessean. You can find it at Tennessean.com. There's a lot in here to kind of sort through. But I just want to bring up a couple of things real quick, talking about like the highest percentage. And I think Suss separates them into tier one quarterbacks and tier four quarterbacks as to who's a success, who's an absolute bust, and what are some of the trends that actually determine this. And he says, you know, one of the points he brings up here is from 2000 to 2022, starting 8-plus games as a rookie, winning a high volume of them have been a strong indicator of success. Starting 8-plus games as a rookie, losing has been a strong indicator of failure. You hear that and you say, oh, okay, great. Winning is good, losing is bad.
Right.
It gets deeper than that the more you go. It says from 1970 to 2022, enduring coaching changes in each of your first two seasons and posting a high interception rate as a rookie has been a strong indicator of success.
Throw those picks, baby.
And I read that. I was like, huh, okay. It says from 19, 1970 to 19 or to 2022, starting in week one of your rookie season and finishing the year with a high total of interceptions beyond all the coaching changes is a high indicator of success. So I read those things and I was like, huh, well, I did not really expect that to be what happens. And Suss talks specifically about the interceptions part of this. And he says, quote, as for the interceptions thing, what? It's true. Historically speaking, throwing a lot of interceptions as a rookie has been a more strongly correlated indicator of future success than throwing a lot of touchdowns has. This is especially true when you expand the sample back to 1970 and include Hall of Famers such as Terry Bradshaw, Peyton Manning, Troy Aikman, all of whom threw oodles of picks as rookies. But even in the modern era, stars like Matthew Stafford, Andrew Luck, and Cam Newton threw more than an interception per game as rookies and went on to have impressive careers. What do you make of that, Joe Rexroth?
Yeah, that's interesting. We've talked so much about the Peyton stat because he had, I mean, he had just, what, 28 picks or something like that as a rookie? It was something insane. It's
a very high number.
So we've cited him a lot, and I definitely knew of the Bradshaw example too, but it's really interesting. I think it shows you that if you are able to get out there and play through those mistakes, then you learn from them. I guess the best way to learn is to play through them. There's other examples, of course, of quarterbacks who have sat, who benefited, but there's a lot more who sat, who were never good. Also, I think one of the interesting stats in all of this, I really enjoyed this story by Nick. You know, there's almost no correlation between how much you're sacked as a rookie and how that, yeah. Which surprised me a little bit too. I mean, I think of obviously, you know, the David Carr example is the one that everybody talks about too, right? Was it 76 sacks as a rookie in Houston? And obviously it didn't work out for him. But overall this time period, the numbers say that that's not really a thing that matters too much, which I found interesting. But basically, playing, throwing picks. The interesting thing, too, is like throwing picks but also winning. It's like, well, how are you throwing that many picks? And did Peyton Manning, did they win? They didn't win any games when he was a rookie,
3-13 his rookie year. He threw 28 picks.
So that's where it gets interesting. It's like I don't know. I'm trying to think back on like Bradshaw or Aikman, like how much winning they did. I don't think Cam Ward's going to do a lot of winning this year, but he might throw some picks. But also the coaching continuity is part of this, too. That is interesting. And basically, like, if you have continuity, that's good for him. If you can have as much continuity as possible, that has indicated success.
Well, also, like, we talk a lot about, is it good to play the quarterback early? Is it good to sit the quarterback early? And if you look deep enough, you can find good examples of both, right? Like, it doesn't take very long to look at, oh, sitting a quarterback could be a really good thing. And he's like, well, look at Steve McNair. Look at Aaron Rodgers. Look at Patrick Mahomes. Look at all these guys. So I get that. Tom Brady, probably the best example. And then you look at what Suss has come up with here, and it says variables with the highest percentage of tier one quarterbacks. And the number one variable there is quarterbacks who start in week one, who just go and they play. It's 13 out of 35. It's 37.1%. That's the highest percentage that he's calculated here. So that kind of shows you, get out there and play and then figure it out as you're going along. And it says the highest percentage of tier four quarterbacks, so the quarterbacks that you don't want, are the quarterbacks who attempt fewer than 70 passes as a rookie. So that, I mean, those two things suggest that, hey, if you're looking statistically and mathematically for the highest indicator of success for a quarterback, play him and get him out there and let him throw the ball.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Now, I would guess some of those examples of throwing so few passes might be like, oh, this guy's not very good. It might even be.
Or they get in later in the year, yeah.
Like a Josh Rosen where it's like, oh, this guy's not good at all. So that's why you don't play someone, because the veteran you're trying to replace is actually still better than the rookie. I think there's probably some of that more than like the causation of playing or not playing.
Right.
But yeah, it's really interesting. It's definitely worth checking out. A lot of factors go into it.
It's not perfect. Like, I think some of this reminded me a little bit, Joe, of the hey, if Derrick Henry runs for over 100 yards, the Titans are absolutely winning the game part. It's like, okay, are they winning because he's just magically hit the 100-yard mark, or because of the way the game has gone and the way he's played, that led to them building a lead and them winning, and he's continuing to go.
Right. Like what causes – which causes what?
Yeah. I remember they'd be down 28-0 in some of these games, and Titans fans would be like, just give the ball to Derrick so he can get to 100 yards. We'll win.
All of a sudden, the scoreboard will just change. Titans are ahead. Holy crap. See, it's on Tuck. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, some of these stats are indicators of other things.
Right.
As opposed to just – you did this, and so that led to this.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting.
Liam says, Jameis Winston's still building up for a hell of a career then, if you go by these numbers. He's out there throwing it around, and a lot of interceptions that follow for old Jameis.
He played.
He did.
He threw picks. He
sure losing's did. Really not in my vocabulary.
My guy. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Your reaction to a very interesting piece from Nick Suss at the Tennessean on Cam Ward. We'll continue this discussion coming up next on the Cam Ward front. The best and worst things in sports coming up at 6:45. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon. Big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. We have the best and worst things in sports coming up at 6:45. So we will take your best and worst things on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We just went through a very interesting piece that Nick Suss put together at the Tennessean, looking at quarterback success, failure, what are some of the trends, what are some of the numbers over the past, in some cases, about 25 years, in some cases dating back all the way to 1970, that could be indicators of success or failure. So on the Cam Ward front specifically, like, I think we know he's going to play. So, like, the idea of him sitting, I know Jared has talked about that through the course of the offseason about how he'd rather see Cam Ward sit, even if that means Brandon Allen's playing quarterback for a little while, and he knows that that's not going to be a pleasant experience for Titans fans, but it's about making sure Cam Ward is ready when he steps on the field. And I understand that thought. I really do. I don't think you're going to see that. I think you're going to see Cam Ward step in and be the best quarterback available to the Titans immediately, and he's going to play. So, you know, by these numbers, that's probably the way to go. Again, neither path you take is guaranteed. And I think a lot of this comes down to what sort of makeup does the player have? You know, there's a lot of things that factor into it, obviously, at the NFL level. But, like, I think some people come in, and you just know from the moment they step in your organization, they're ready to play. Yeah, you know, Brian Callahan's talked about that with Joe Burrow. Like, Joe Burrow, from the moment they stepped in, they knew he was ready to play. Some people are not that. Some people you think are ready to play, and you try to convince yourself as a staff they're ready to play, and they're not. And you can look at Anthony Richardson for that. The fact that he played at all during his rookie year to me is just insane. And we talked about that at the time. You know, Cam Ward, to me, Joe, based on the amount of college football that he played, the level in which he played it, his age, and really the makeup that it appears that he has, I feel like he's ready. Like, I don't have any red flags to me that suggest that Cam Ward's not ready to play immediately. There's really only one way to find out. We'll see when he gets on the field. But there are some guys that I think you look at and you think to yourself, yeah, I don't know that I'd really want to see him play week one. I do not feel that way about Cam Ward. I think he's ready to play.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think he's ready to play. Now, my biggest hesitation with him playing is just, again, what's happening? What's happening
around
him?
Who's playing with him?
Yeah, who's playing with him? How are they doing? Are they protecting him? Are they getting open? We know he has a good running back. But I agree. I think he's ready and very different from Anthony Richardson, who'd played very little football. And wasn't supposed to really, like, all the talk for Richardson was, yeah, he's, you know, they're going to take their time. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, actually, no, throw him out there. And again, you look at these things, and maybe they had some of this data. A lot of the data says throw him out there. But that's where you have to, that's where you have to look at a situation on its own, and the hugely different situations between, like, Richardson and Cam Ward. The coaching change thing is really interesting to me. because obviously we've talked a lot about that. We will continue to talk about that, especially if the Titans have a losing season, other things go poorly, but like Cam Ward plays well and there's promise. So the tier four quarterbacks, so this is the worst of the possible, you know, you cut them into four groups. These are the worst. These are the worst outcomes. The number, as you said earlier, Robbie, number one way to have a tier four is attempt fewer than 70 passes as a rookie. 43.8% of the people who did that were tier four. So again, I think a lot of them are probably like, some of it is like even like buyer's remorse immediately,
yep.
You know, whatever, you know, a lot of different factors there. But two, the second most way to have a tier four quarterback, teams that made coaching changes before or during their second season. And that is 37.5% of those quarterbacks ended up tier four, like the bottom of the barrel. Third most likely, quarterbacks who played for teams that made coaching changes before or during their rookie seasons and their second seasons.
Yep.
That's also 37. Then there's another one, teams that made coaching changes before or during their second season, not including QBs who didn't play as rookies. But basically, firing a head coach before or during a quarterback's second season, as he writes, quote, leads to brutal results. Not an automatic death sentence. Aaron Rodgers, Jared Goff. There's two. You know, Jeff Fisher, Aaron Rodgers. Who the heck would that have been?
Who was there?
Is that Sherman?
I think it was.
Is that Mike Sherman?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So you can always find an example to contradict whatever these results are, and he does a good job of saying, let's not forget this. But here's some of these quarterbacks who did have these outcomes, which is the coach being fired. Look at this list of names. Rex Grossman, Daniel Jones, Joey Harrington. Oh, man. I'm sorry you got drafted by the Lions. Brandon Whedon, Blaine Gabbert, Josh Rosen, Paxton Lynch. Now, it also includes, I think this is interesting, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Justin Fields. And we know that Baker and Sam have gone on, you know, after all that stuff to be pretty good. So that's another, you know, story that obviously Titans fans hope we never get into with Cam Ward, because he stays here and he's great.
Right. And again, these are all, I think, first-round picks that we're talking about here.
It's all first-round picks.
It's all first-round picks. So, like, I mean, Levis would fall into this. Now, again, you know, the examples that Suss is picking out are first-round picks that are going to 2022. So that's obviously, first of all, not Levis with a first-round pick, and predates him in the date of it. But, I mean, think about if you wanted to extend that out, Joe. I mean, this is also, I think, a perfect example to look at this and say, I mean, all these numbers are not perfect, but they are interesting. Like, Will Levis would fall into that category of making a coaching change within his first 2 years and then him ending up being a Tier 4 quarterback, right? Like, that's exactly what has happened to him. Now, again, he's not a first-round pick, and he's not a part of all this. But it also shows you, like, I think people look at this and they say, okay, if you're a Titans fan, how many of you believe that the reason that Will Levis hasn't worked out as Titans quarterback is because Mike Vrabel got fired? I don't know. Maybe some people do believe that.
I've heard Stilley talk about, well, why was he so – he looked promising with him,
yeah.
And then last year it was terrible.
But – the fact is, they fired Vrabel, and then the next year, Will Levis was terrible. And so again, he's not a part of all this, but that goes to show you, I think, that it's, you know, the numbers are not absolute. It's a little bit more nuanced than just, well, you better not fire the coach first 2 years in, because the numbers tell you that's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it's like, so should the Titans, should Amy Adams Strunk read this and be like, okay, I'm going to have a little bit more patience for Brian Callahan because of this.
Chad, we can't fire Brian after this year, no matter what.
Or, you know, I mean, to me, it's like, first of all, I think that there already should be a real desire to make that work.
I agree.
A real hope that they connect, that they work well together, and that then you're sticking with it despite the record. Unless the record is, you know, again, so obviously tied to just a disorganized, dysfunctional team with a head coach who just isn't good at being a CEO. And that may be the case. But if it's just like they didn't have a very good year, they're bad. We all know they're bad. Cam Ward looks good. We're still going to be talking about Brian Callahan being fired. And I mean, I can tell you right now, if that's how it works out and we don't have glaring examples of bad coaching – you know, I do think that this is another little piece of information that suggests, you know, continuity can be good for quarterback.
Liam says, that was really interesting, and it throws cold water on the sit and learn argument. Again, like, you can find examples of both, right? So none of this is like, you know, science here. It's not like, well, you must do it this way or your quarterback is doomed. So much of this is situation. Frankly, so much of this is organization and how do they handle not only the quarterback position but everything around the quarterback, who's coaching. Like, there's so much that goes into this that, you know, it's hard to have grand takeaways from it that are absolute. So I think you got to keep that in mind. But it does show you that, like, we have heard from people that think that if you just throw the quarterback into the fire that you're doing them a disservice, and that's not always the case. Like, there are plenty of examples in league history of the quarterback playing immediately, and that's the right call. Play them immediately.
Yeah. And that's what I like about this, is because we basically always go back to Peyton on that.
Yeah.
And as this does a good job of illustrating, there's a lot more examples than that. And the overall numbers support it.
Exactly. And, you know, the Stafford one's a good example, too. Like, I'm looking at Matthew Stafford's rookie year.
0-16, just the worst organization in the NFL at that point.
Right. Like, you're talking about just terrible. And his rookie year was 0-9. And he played in 10 games. If memory serves me correctly, I think he got hurt.
Yes. He got banged. He got crushed. He got hurt. Yes.
But the numbers weren't good. Like, he threw for 20 interceptions his rookie year. 13 touchdowns, 20 picks. He only completed 53.3% of his passes. And you look at that, and I think on the surface you'd be worried about, man, did we throw him into the fire too soon? And is this going to ruin him moving forward? And then he came back after that, and albeit even still on bad teams, played the quarterback position at a pretty darn high level.
Yeah, and I want to say, like, his third year, they actually were good. Like, they actually made the playoffs.
Yep.
Yeah, they had a total shootout between him and Drew Brees.
He threw for 5,000 yards that year, which, again, that's 2011.
Yeah.
5,000 yards, 41 touchdowns.
Yeah, yeah. And they had a playoff game with New Orleans. It was, I mean, I don't remember what the final score was. Neither team could stop the other team, but it was just – so that, I'll tell you that you look at those numbers, and unfortunately, people made me watch that god-awful team. There was excitement and good cause for excitement with him despite those numbers. They lost. He threw picks, and yet you watch him play. It's like, oh, yeah, this is actually a dude. You know. And then, of course, it didn't take long before, you know, that played out, and they actually found a way to support him a little bit. So, yeah, he is a good example of you would look at that. If you just looked at the numbers, you know, you'd especially like how bad the team was. He did not come into a good situation. It was a terrible situation. You, like, a lot of people at that time, and I think some people were making the case, like, why are you throwing him out there for this? It doesn't make sense. You're going to ruin him. All this stuff. He got hurt. He got hit. He got sacked. He threw picks. He ended up being great.
Yeah. And again, like, there are some people that believe that if your quarterback is truly made of the right stuff, that they will overcome whatever situation they're in.
I
don't know that I go
that.
There. Like, I don't know that I'm all the way there. Because, I think you can make a situation bad enough where it can ruin a guy.
Oh, I agree.
So I'm not all the way there. But I will say, like, if your quarterback gets ruined because of a rookie season where they, like, get sacked 65 times – and they're not some major injury that goes along with it, they're probably not made of the right stuff.
Yeah.
By and large.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I do think the seeing ghosts thing is real with some people. I will always believe Marcus Mariota, pretty good quarterback for the Tennessee Titans. I always believe that, like, there was a time in his career when he didn't, and then there was the broken leg, and from then on, I think he saw ghosts more than he did previously. I don't have stats to back it up. I'm not aware of a seeing ghosts.
Was there a time in his career where he could complete a 12-yard out route? Because I didn't see one.
I mean, I could probably put together an amazing package of highlights.
I would love to see you put that together.
Oh, I mean, I'll just put together a package of when he destroyed your Green Bay Packers here in 2016.
That game was 100% incorrect.
What's that?
You were 100% incorrect.
Oh. I thought that was actually Ian talking. I'm like, wait, what?
No, sorry.
But I agree. I think there's a lot of, like, if you can get through this stuff, then you're really on your way. I've said a million times, I want to see an alternative world where Chuck Long doesn't have to play for that god-awful organization.
Yeah.
People never think of Chuck Long. I mean, Chuck Long and Bo Jackson had the best Heisman race of all time. People don't remember how great he was as a college quarterback at Iowa. Well, he went to the Lions, and he just got physically picked apart, and he was nothing. You know, his career was crushed. So sometimes I think sometimes you can't overcome it, and I don't know how many people would overcome some of these situations.
Let's head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our buddy Mark in Nashville. Mark, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, how you doing, man? What's up, Joe, Robbie?
What's up, Mark?
How you doing, man?
How you doing, buddy?
Happy 4th of July coming up. Hey, Joe, before I say what I'm getting ready to say, I talked to the manager with Creed, Bruno, and we got it hooked up, man, where we're going to have a concert right there in front of your yard.
Oh, thank God.
Stage up and everything. And we're going to let you listen to some of your favorite music from Creed.
Oh, I can't wait.
Good. I've been debating buying a firearm, and now you've talked me into it. Bruno.
Yeah, that's his name, Joe. So, you know.
It's good to know.
Hey, y'all were talking about Cam Ward. Joe, I think Cam Ward is going to be a beast, man. I think he's pro ready. I mean, he had a lot of starts in college. You know, what's the thing about quarterbacks in college? You know, 20 or less starts, they're prone to have a bust career. But guys with 20 or more starts in college, you know, are better prepared for the pros. I mean, he ran a pro style offense in Miami. I'm sure Callahan had used some of those type situations with the Titans to advance Cam and stuff. I think he's going to be all right. I think the key to it, Joe, I hope they don't, you know, ruin him, because they've had bad luck with quarterbacks, you know, Locker and those, Mariota and those guys. I think the key is going to be Callahan, man. Callahan has to win to stay with Cam. You don't want to get in a situation where Callahan loses his job. You bring a new coach in there. He's got to learn a brand-new offense all over again. That doesn't really work out well with NFL quarterbacks, especially young rookie quarterbacks like Cam. I look for him to have a good year, man, 3,700 yards, 20-25 cheap touchdowns. He'll have some picks, but I think Cam's going to be all right. If you looked at those games against California, Virginia Tech, he's got that it factor, Joe. He's got that comeback in him. I don't think no moment's too big for him. So I think Cam will be all right. I really, you know, I wish he had a went somewhere else, but hopefully he'll work out for the Titans. I mean, I'm just not confident with the Titans' past history of quarterbacks. It's not good, man, and not really anything great since McNair. So you got to look at that picture right there. But I think he'll be good. But his success hinges on Callahan having success. You know, Callahan's going to have to win 7-8 games, you know, to be the coach going forward. And I hope it works out. I want to see Callahan there. I'm not like Steelman and not having any confidence in him. I'm going to have some confidence in Callahan and say he will get the job done this year. He will be the coach for the Tennessee Titans come next year. But, hey, y'all, get all your firecrackers ready, your cherry bombs and all this and that. 4th of July, do your thing. I mean, Robbie, you said you like to shoot fireworks. I'll be out there tonight with my granddaughter bombing it up.
There we go.
So everybody get ready for the 4th. Y'all have a good 4th.
Thank you, Mark.
Hey, Joe, did you win yesterday?
Well, Jared decided I was going to go against Carolina, and then he gave her the win for no reason. So,
well, Joe, that's, you know, that's a
fixed outcome.
Yeah, it's always fixed. I mean, any stolen fix.
Yeah, you know, he hits that ATM and throws Carolina his money under the table before you even realize it. You know what's going on.
Oh, absolutely. It's a total grift going
Mark,
on.
Mark, thank you for the call, brother.
Thanks,
appreciate
buddy.
It.
All right, see y'all later, man.
We got the best and worst things in sports coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
The best and worst of the sports week, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
On ESPN.
102.5, The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
It's time!
This is the worst.
You look like you're feeling sorry for yourself.
I believe in miracles. Yes!
He's one of one. He is him.
This is a Coke bottle. It's not a crystal ball.
When I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
Okay, let's go.
It is time for the best and worst things in sports. We'll take your best things, your worst things on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Joe Rexroad, kick us off with your best and worst things in sports.
We'll go fast. Best, Nashville SC, absolutely on it here, playing some great soccer. Sam Surridge, I mean, this guy is a star. He's a star in the city of Nashville. Nashville SC is my best. My worst, I can't come up with anything better than what I've been complaining about all week, so I'll just keep complaining. These whiners about Caitlin Clark. Notice that she doesn't cry about all this stuff.
That's true.
Take a cue from her and pipe down. Everything's going to be okay. Thank you.
Ian Safar, your best and worst things in the world of sports for this week.
Well, Joe and I actually have the same best. I went Nashville SC also.
Nice.
The 13 unbeaten streak, new record. Take on Philly, I believe, Saturday. Help me secure not last place in weekend winners.
Yeah, that would be me.
Nice job. I like that little dig at the end.
And then worst, some news this morning, other soccer news. Diogo Jota, I guess from Liverpool, Portugal, I guess passed away in a car accident last night.
Oh, wow. Ooh, that's awful.
Some young soccer star. I'm not super familiar with his game, but yeah, I guess he's only 27.
Oh, man.
Liverpool was playing really well, and I don't know. I woke up and I saw that this morning in a car accident, him and his brother in Spain. So that's pretty sad.
Yeah.
That's pretty rough.
That is
so
awful.
I'll stick with worst on the soccer note, too.
My best thing in sports, Brent Burns has signed with the Colorado Avalanche at age 40.
That ought to do it.
And he is moving into season 22 as an NHL player. He has played 1,497 regular season games. So he's three games away from 1,500. Season 22 coming up from Brent Burns, who has been in the league since 03-04. He played 36 games in 03-04 for the Minnesota Wild. It's pretty, I mean, look, in hockey, that's a really hard thing to do. He's played 22 seasons. It's crazy he's able to do that.
Katie Rexroad was a fresh-faced newlywed, just thrilled with her young husband back when he started his career.
That's right.
Still thrilled.
Still thrilled out there. Really good stuff. 22 for Brent Burns. So I don't know. I don't know exactly what he's going to bring to the table and or change for
the
Colorado Avalanche. But, I mean, look, last year he put up 29 points. You know, he's not the 83-point guy he was, obviously, you know, more than a half decade ago. But still gets the shot through. Still makes that first pass coming out of the zone. So we'll see what that looks like for Brent Burns. My worst thing in sports real quick, just some of the reaction to the Brady Martin pick. I understand being disappointed they didn't take James Higgins. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But some of just like the total trashing of Brady Martin that has gone on, most of which takes place without any of these people ever having seen him play, really bothers me. Like, I get it. You're upset. You wanted James Higgins, who you probably also didn't watch for the most part. And I know some of you did, and that's fine. But some of the reaction to Brady Martin being the draft pick, I'm like, guys, for the majority of you who have never watched any of these guys play, to be this mad about it, let's take a step back for a minute.
Yes. All he does is hit people. He has never scored a goal, going back to youth hockey.
Does he even hold a stick when he's out there, or does he just run out there looking to punch people?
Just skates around blasting people.
It's like, wow, Brady Martin got taken fifth overall, and he's never scored a goal in his life. It's amazing
it's
how
like
he's done
slap
that.
Shot.
Yeah, exactly. So just dial it back a little bit on the outrage. Let's see if he's a good player. You know.
Now I'm interested to see what your rant is.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what it is, too, at 7:45. I know what it is.
I can't wait.
It irritated me last night. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. An update from L'Jarius Sneed this week. Do we believe it? And if so, what does it mean? We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, the game.